This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. The 4th of July holiday is like opening night for historical reenactors. From Boston's Freedom Trail to Gettysburg, insurance agents, dentists, lawyers, and mechanics don period costumes and attitudes to give visitors a more personal experience of battles and events that shaped our nation's history. Independence Day also marks the annual Mountain Men Rendezvous in Pinedale, Wyoming. There, dozens of rugged-looking men wearing animal hides shake off the yoke of civilization, tether their horses to trees, and make camp, joining others over grilled buffalo meat. My guest David Burnett spent 2 years among members of the American Mountain Men Association taking photographs, documenting a group bent on preserving the art of survival, self-reliance, and a way of life long since passed. His photographs appeared in an article for National Geographic documenting the Mountain Men Revival. David Burnett, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Well, thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
This July 4th gathering repeats one that began more than a century ago. What do we know about this evolution of this rendezvous?
Well, what's really interesting is that when you go back and explore a little bit the whole Mountain Man period, which was from the 1820 to the early 1830s, it was kind of driven, as many things were then, by commerce, and it was by the simple fact that beaver pelts made the best men's hats. They would, you know, the Mad Hatter that we all know, the phrase the Mad Hatter. Well, the hatters went mad because they used mercury and other crazy chemicals to try and treat the final beaver pelts. But that was made into felt, which is what became the hats of that period of time in the early 1800s. So you had this group of very individualistic men. They were usually operating in small groups. There would be a few people remaining in camp, and the trappers would go out and set traps, and then every day go out and clear the traps and bring the animals back in, and the kind of the lousy work was to be stuck in camp. At least this is what they told me. And I went on a couple of days beaver trapping expedition in Montana a couple of years ago, and you know that's the least fun part of it. It's not very romantic. It's a lot of work. Everything they did was a lot of work.
So these fur trappers, these mountain men, just drove the American economy and drove the movement out west. They kind of went out of fashion when fur went out of fashion. And it was revived again, in 1968, I'm reading from your notes. What was behind this motivation to revive the ways of the mountain man?
Well, the group was started by a number of Vietnam vets who had done one or more tours in Vietnam, and when they got home were kind of unsatisfied with the way their lives were going, and they longed for that kind of independence that, as a grunt in the field in Vietnam, you kind of felt this very high degree of self-reliance, and I think that's probably what drove a lot of it.
Huh.
And it's attracted a lot of veterans over the years, although there are any number of people who have not done military service, but there are a lot of vets in the group. And they really enjoy being out there, either with a small group or by themselves, having learned many of these skills, how to build a fire, how to build a shelter, how to cook and skin animals, how to make coffee when you don't really have anything but a few coffee beans and an old pot. All these things that were very elemental skills, and which, aside maybe from the Boy Scouts, are just not taught anywhere anymore. You just, you know, as the society has become more and more urban and electronic, a lot of these things have just kind of fallen the wayside. And I think much of it is that much of the desire on behalf of these guys is that they feel a great sense of independence and freedom, and that they can kind of do what they want, how they want. And it's kind of fun to hang out with them because it's very different than, you know, I live in New York. I travel quite a bit, and there aren't many places where you really run into people with that kind of attitude and their desire to really remain unbridled by modern technology.
The pictures are just extraordinary. I mean, it really does look like you're glimpsing an old way of life. They look very, very authentic. So describe to people who aren't looking at these photographs, you know, what does a mountain man look like? What does he wear? What does he smell like?
Well, pretty much it's head to toe in buckskin, which is tanned leather hides from either buffalo. Maybe there was some that are from cattle, but I think a lot of it was buffalo. There were a few guys that had taken buffalo skins and fashioned them into a big winter coat, and various and sundry hats. I mean, the hats are kind of, you know, a combination of the old gnarly pre-cowboy hat, kind of hat with a brim, to these little caps that look like a winter cap, where it's just something on your head with a little tie string that goes down on either side. In addition, they have their powder horn, always carrying their musket, because you just never knew, you know, and to that extent, they're very, it's quite authentic. I mean, they always have their musket, and they have shooting competitions, which I have to say this, now that I get to say it on radio, I had never had a chance to fire a musket, and at the first roundup I went to, there were probably 60 guys in Kansas, and there was a shooting competition, and near the end of the thing, and I was shooting pictures every direction, and one of the guys said, "Hey, have you tried this? Would you like to shoot a musket?" And I said, "Sure, let me try that." So I fired, and they had this little metal target out there about 75 or 80 feet, and there was this ping, and everybody's like, "Wow, that was pretty cool." And at that moment, I kind of was accepted into the group that I could fire. I did way better than any of the guys did. And they said, "How'd you do that, man?" I said, "Well, I've never fired a musket, but I have worked a football game with a 400-millimeter lens. And I know when you have to, like, be steady and aim carefully."
I'm speaking with the photographer David Burnett about his time documenting the members of the American Mountain Men Association for National Geographic. You describe several of them, the Montana dentist Scott Olson. You know, he adopts
right.
a different name, Doc Ivory. Some mm-hmm. of them shave with 150-year-old straight-edge razors. I'm trying to imagine this guy, you know, looking into this dentist, looking into a patient's mouth under fluorescent lights and, you know, sort of thinking of life as a mountain mm-hmm. man. How deeply do they go into this transformation?
Well, one of the things that one of my disappointments in the story was I wanted to actually go to Doc Ivory's office and
see
make
him
a
at
picture
work.
That was a patient-eye view of what it was like. Because I suspect he still comes to work in his buckskins, but I don't know that for a fact, but it wouldn't surprise me. And I know that there must be a great deal of paraphernalia around the office that's mountain man related. But I did a lot of things, but I wasn't able to get to his office, and that's one of the things I felt bad about. But
so how did they get there? I mean, did they just all leave their car somewhere and, you know, mule in or walk in?
Normally, well, there'll be an area where you leave the trucks and the cars, and they bring the horses in, and there'll be an area for the horses, and then you walk another quarter mile, half mile to the camping area, and then at the big rendezvous that I went to, it was spread out over probably three-quarters of a mile. You know, they're not really right on top of each other. Everybody's got their own little area, and then they have kind of a central area. And there's a little shop where you can buy, you know, people bring things. One of the guys that I met along the way became intrigued with 19th century firearms and has started building these beautiful handmade muskets that are almost perfect copies of these rifles from the 1820s and 30s. And so you see all this stuff on display. The level of craftsmanship is extremely high because there is this real desire to be authentic. And in those days, if anybody bothered to make something, they usually made a really good version of it.
Do they leave their cell phones and smartphones and cameras behind for this rendezvous? I mean, is it absolutely...
There's a few phones and a few cameras that come sneaking out, but it's. I think everybody really likes to stay in the period. And then there were... activities all day. I mean, at the rendezvous, you had these little seminars, and they believed that the education is a real part of it. So you had people doing, you know, how to pack a pack horse. Like, I mean, I'm sure that that's probably not a class that either you or I took in school.
No.
And they're just real genuine people. You know, they're not real BSers, and they don't. They're there because they feel a real affinity with that period of time. And one of the things that most people don't understand is that even though there had been some recording that the Indian tribes that lived in Wyoming had found a passageway through the Continental Divide. It wasn't until this path was rediscovered and became known by the mountain men that it was possible to bring a cart from St. Louis to the Pacific Ocean. There was this very, I have to say, I got very emotional just standing in this little plot of kind of mountainous desert, a location a few miles after the pass, to the west of the pass. It was the point at which you had to decide, were you going to take the Utah, the Mormon Trail, which would sort of head south into Utah territory, the California Trail, which would head straight on west through what would eventually become Utah and Nevada, or the Oregon Trail, which would take you up to the northwest. And a lot of historians of the West actually believe that had these trails not been made popular by the mountain men, that Washington and maybe even Oregon would still be part of Canada. And you could have a long discussion about whether that's a good or bad thing. But get along, little doggies,
you know that Wyoming will be your new home. David Burnett, his extraordinary photographs of the revival of the American Mountain Men were made for National Geographic. You'll find a link to look at them at wordofmouthradio.org.